Hello, Rejects. I'm Brent.
And I'm Dave. Welcome back to Rejected Central.
There's a really good chance that you drink coffee every day. And if you believe the interwebs, and we do, 30 to 40% of the world's population has at least a single cup every single day. And if you're in North America like we are, that figure goes even higher, and two-thirds of us have a daily cup of joe.
Well, I'm one of the one-third that don't. I'm a tea guy.
Tea guy.
Two milk, one sugar. You know how it is. I certainly respect coffee and admire the culture. The irony of being rejected on our podcast isn't lost on me either.
Well, okay, except for Dave then. We're pretty attached to that fix, that daily fix. But most of us don't really think too much about where the coffee comes from, much less about the lives of the folks in other countries who make it possible for us to enjoy that daily cup of coffee. But we probably should. Because where it comes from, how it's harvested, whether the workers who process our favorite drink receive a fair wage, if the farmers are offered a fair price for the beans, all of that matters a lot. For this episode, we are live. Well, I guess we're not live. We're recording in the Relay Coffee Roastery in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. And this is where the raw beans get roasted and packaged and launched into the world. And we're sitting with Jason Hoffing, who, along with his wife Rachel, owns and operates Relay Coffee. Now, Jason is a local legend. 2023 marks the 15th anniversary of the day when he and Rachel began roasting small batches of organic fair trade coffee here in Hamilton. And you can read more bio details at relaycoffee.com and buy their fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that it's the best coffee anywhere, and that's just good science. But today we're going to focus on Relay and Jason and Rachel and what they do as being the people part of the business. Jason, welcome to Rejected Central.
And happy anniversary, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. Happy 15th.
Yeah. Thank you. It's weird because the pandemic, I'm not sure counts, but I guess it does. And so, yeah, 15 years. It feels really fast. And I think that means I'm doing the right thing.
Very cool. Well, I mean, you could look at it this way. In the middle of it, you literally have a wormhole of time.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Time doesn't matter. It could either be really long or really short or all of the above. It just, you never know. So we like to put our guests on the spot a little bit. And you have a story where you said that somebody knew better than you.
Yeah. It's in the early days of running a roastery in which you're trying to kind of carve out a name for you or to provide a service. So I was on the sales on the street, passing out business cards and cafes, offering samples. And there was one gentleman or a cafe that I brought samples for and inquired through email regarding prices. And so there was some interest there. So we continued to the next stage, which is pricing. And then he got back to me a couple of days later, and I thought it was going to be a very good phone call. I'm like, oh, great. I think this gentleman has decided to choose us as his roaster for his cafe. But no, it was a conversation to tell me how I'm doing everything wrong.
We love those conversations. Yes. I'd say the best.
Jason, I can't get over your pricing. It just doesn't make sense. I'm a business person from Toronto. I've done this, listed off his resume. And he just like, you can't charge that prices. You're not going to make it if you continue with these prices. And I'm just stuck to my guns. I'm just like, no, these are the prices I offer. I understood the value I was giving, whether with the coffee I was roasting, the coffee I was bringing in, and then the service that I provide. And so he said, good luck, but I don't see you lasting to the end of the year. And well, I was just I'm painting a lighter picture than what it was actually was. Like something must have triggered in him because there was, just a harshness to his voice. And it was taking me aback by it. But then I drive by his cafe. He's no longer open.
Mr. Big Pants from Toronto is gone now.
Yeah, I'm just like, I kind of won, you know? And
I'm sure there's a German word that perfectly describes that. I mean, Schadenfreude or something.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's the perfect one, but it's the comeuppance of all things. You're just like, yes.
Trevor Noah's latest stand-up on Netflix has a whole portion on that word about kind of rejoicing or taking joy in someone else's misery, which is I'm glad I wasn't going to use that word
technically, because it's a hard thing, even though, and as a writer, okay, I will admit something. I get jealous of other writers who succeed, right? I mean, I've done pretty well for a writer in 2023, you know, to have published a few books and to have won a couple of awards. I like to say I can't complain. Of course, I could complain.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when I hear about somebody doing something better to me, I have to admit that there's a feeling, right? It's that feeling of driving by that cafe and saying, that just feels... And then when those people sometimes don't get the follow-up big deal, that's the feeling. It's the feeling of driving by the cafe where you're like, that person is no longer in business. You're like, that is just about right.
Yeah. I feel that's natural.
Yeah. Especially what it was is, and this is how I've kind of spun it, right? Like, because we don't get every sale or every conversation turns into a customer, but it was just how he approached it. Like, he could have taken an approach if he is or was this big Toronto business guy, he could have offered something new as he saw like a young business person trying to start a coffee company, being like, here's my experience and this is what it is. You may want to try that, you know, but to be, to purposely call me up to tell me, or argue with me, just didn't feel good. So yeah, I'm like, man. So what, going back to, getting to the point was that, but what I do when I don't get customers and I've had people on my side are just like, why are you still talking to the person? They said no and stuff like that. I'm like, I'll get them later. It won't be now, but I'm going to work and build the brand and build the customer word of mouth and have my customers just constantly go into their restaurants, be like, what coffee do you serve? You'd be like, I don't do that purposely. Right. My customers tell me that they go in and request and ask. And so all it is like, I don't burn bridges. You didn't have to burn a bridge. We could have collaborated later when coffee prices were getting higher, or he knew that buying cheaper coffee was providing an inferior product. And then he's just like, oh, okay, I guess there may be something to buying more expensive coffee.
Well, there's an episode idea for us, rejecting burned bridges, right? Because that is so human. The temptation to kind of, the temptation to burn it down when something doesn't go right. Just like, that's it, I'm out, I'm done, and I'm going to take everything with me as I go.
The thing that I could take away from your experience is that, well, I got that customer servicing. If it wasn't locked and loaded, now it is, because you know what it's like to be on the other side of it when you could have been mentored.
Yeah,
right. It's a really gracious way to look at that kind of rejection from somebody else, to say, I'm not going to burn this bridge. You never know, right? Basically, that's it. You never know. Why burn a bridge? And I think we're all guilty of burning the occasional bridge, but to say, right, I've been rejected, I've been denied, or I failed, or whatever it is, and to say, the whatever that's responsible for it, screw that, it's done, and you want to take it down as well. Yeah. Human, but...
Or I would say, internally, what I did well is that stokes the fire in me to be better, to work harder, and not out of spite, just being like, of just trying to prove to myself and doing the work to kind of be like, no, he's wrong. And it just kind of refines me, and it made my, whether it was, you know, building up the reputation, whether it was building up the marketing materials, whether it was just building in the positive vibes that that people carry around and relay.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that because I really do feel that people's perception of Relay, and I used the word legend earlier a little bit in a carefree way.
I'm humbled.
But it's very true because there's a human nature, or there's a human aspect to it that just says, I value people and I value what I do. And I think that does make rejection and this failure. And, you know, hearing you talk about your work and your business and your family and stuff, it is really great to hear when those things come together. And I won't say that it makes rejection easier, because rejection is always hard, but it really does help make sure that the response is measured, doesn't it?
Yeah. There's constructive rejection and then there's destructive rejection, right? Like what this potential partner could have done, what you both could have done for each other, perhaps this person might have still been in business today.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking off air earlier about a certain industry that we both love. Well, I want to quote the great Vince McMahon.
The great.
Well, great. I use a finger quote, so we're not on a video podcast. Yeah. But his thing is, like, you know, he's been, you know, wronged by, he's wronged and has been wronged by so many performers in the past. But when it comes to business, his credo is never say never.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. So what this person could have done is said, maybe not right now, like you said earlier, but down the road.
And there's a number of people who've come back and my business partner or wife, it's just like, man, I really admire your patience with people. Cause she's just like, how could they, and she's fiery. I love her. And I said, no, we're just going to play a longer game than they will. Mm. And then I do have to say that, yes, they paint this picture of like, of confidence of like, I take all rejection and I make it better for myself and I'll prove them. But it does take a hit, you know, and you have to find you got to find ways of just shrugging it off, because there are the self-doubts, the questions, and then even putting out a product, I think what it is. So when you say legend, it takes me back, because I don't necessarily hear that, because I'm in my office. I'm at the office. I'm at the roaster. I put it out and then I send it out there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know if anyone likes my coffee.
Well,
they must. They sell. Like it sells.
Well, they do.
And then, when it's other people, I'm just like, I'm like, that's amazing. But that's the hard thing I would say as a writer writing things. Like, I don't know if this is good. Like, I believe in it. I like it. But you don't necessarily hear all the positive feedback that you get.
No, and you were talking off air earlier about people see the Instagram and the Facebooks and all of the pictures that have been very carefully framed and everything. And that's good. And there's so much goodness to look at. But it doesn't tell the story of the dirty mop water in the bathroom. There's none. Yeah. There's none here. I just made that up. I had to pick something that is absolutely unrealistic.
That's out back before you
get this place is beyond reproach.
The place smells like heaven.
It does.
Yeah.
But and then I'm now immune to it.
But everybody who's done hard work, so but everybody who's done hard work, it knows that behind the gloss of the success of something, and not even just the success, right? I mean, just the what gets put out into the world,
the facade
sometimes, and is the grit, is the the smudges, right? Yeah. The fact that when you roast coffee, your hands get dirty. You have to wear ear protection when you're working with the roaster itself. Mm-hmm. You don't always love the smell of coffee every day, right? There's things that are challenging, too.
No, I do love the smell of coffee every day. I'll tell you this. My kids don't like the smell of coffee, because sometimes when I take them on some deliveries with me when I'm young, they just backflash like, oh, we don't get to do our things at home. Dad's forcing us to be on deliveries. Oh, it smells like coffee in this thing.
Let's go back a few years and let's look at pre-coffee. PC. When you graduated from university, you graduated with a major in theater arts, minor in, or double major?
Double major in theater and psych, and then I minored in history.
Okay, so I know it's a bit of a leap here, one artist to another. Getting out of university, did you land in the dream job that you imagined you would land in?
No. So as I finished when I finished my theater degree, I just have a real love for film and TV and storytelling and working with people and creating something that there's an audience and you have gifted the audience something. And so I wanted to go to film school, and I applied to film school, and I should have tried harder, but you know, I got the letter and then I'm just like, okay, that's done. But, what happened was, you know, I fell in love with the love of my life, my wife. And
I fell in love with coffee.
I nearly audibly gasped this
love my life, my and business partner. So that softened the blow, right? So of and distracting me from not achieving those theater dreams. But I still look for smaller opportunities that help me kind of keep those creative juices going. So I was invited to perform for an event in the evening, a small one-act play. And so I said yes to that. I started writing myself and being like, taking it into my own hands. And that'll be the story of Relay is... okay, you know, I'm really outside the system that has been built for film and TV, and I don't live in Toronto, and I do now have the starting of a family. I can't commit all my time to that. So what can I kind of do on smaller scales? And what was great about the late 90s, early 2000s was a very DIY attitude towards film and the rise of independent film that I was like loving, that you could grab a camera and you can take a mundane day in the life of a clerk. So I started writing worked with a friend on a play and I started investing in small equipment, iMac, and maybe the story's going wrong. We're totally off of coffee now, but
no, I think it's really great. Yeah. We're starting a podcast right? Where you pivot.
Yeah.
You look to make something beautiful. You make art of some kind, right? And this is not a self-help podcast by any stretch, but I think we do need to highlight here. So basically, Jason's cure for rejection was to find the love of his life, first of all.
Oh, wow.
And then the second thing was to make movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
That
all
old
right.
chestnut.
Okay, that's that old chestnut.
Yeah. Did you screen your movie anywhere, Jay?
No.
But I had an amazing two great weekends with friends, right? And even then, I've already talked about, okay, what is the definition of success? And, you know, because the odds are so against you. How do I not make that crushing by not of like that film career not achieving? How do I take joy in getting a script, getting a couple of friends together, organizing a weekend, two weekends where we just shoot this thing. And then I have fun editing it. And then we have a small little party, little screening party. And we're like, man, that was a lot of fun. And
well, that's
and
what then, art should be. It should, it should bring joy.
Yeah.
Not always happiness, not always glossy and all of that stuff. But I think art's greatest calling and purpose is to bring us something that speaks to who we are as joyful people.
Yeah.
Right. And it should. And if, and, you know, and you do it because you love it, you do it. And I don't know many people in my particular side of things who do things for quote unquote success. I can't think of anybody actually that I personally know. Mm-hmm. Like I know of writers who are definitely driven by that, but yeah, no, you just do. You just do. Yeah. Okay, so
and everything's the building blocks. Everything is the building. Sorry, I'm talking.
So the listener knows this is a live on location. Every time you hear this, it is actually Relay Coffee being drunk.
Yeah, and Jason likes to use his hands a lot. He's very animated. It could be all that coffee he consumes and roasts. So I apologize, audience, for the hitting of the table.
You don't understand. This is decaf.
That's right. And that's right. We didn't have to tell them that, Dave. We could have been.
Hey, my decafs are really good. Don't let anyone like treat decaf as garbage.
Nope. You would never know.
And
my wife lives by it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, to each their own. And I'm glad I get to roast for more people by not being a snob that doesn't roast decaf.
It's honestly delicious. Yeah. So,
can I just ask you, what was your epiphany moment when it came to coffee? When you looked at the way things were, and you decided, and we're now 15 years ago, first roast, 2008. What was that for? What was that moment for you? What caused you to coffee?
So the epiphany moment was, so not having the film career not booming as it should have, but kind of in a job with we had two kids, and it was just kind of a regular 9-to-5 type of delivery job, pickup and delivery job for a company. And what was, and I was doing that for about 5 years, but then it was the questions of like, okay, how long am I going to do this? Is this what I want to do for the next 35 years? Mm. When there is this side of me of creativity, of working with teams, of creating something out of nothing. That's the whole theater thing, right? And trying to kind of grab that. So it was just like, okay, I need to do something different. And not knowing what it is. And I would say that took about like 18 months. I was sitting with that question and just being patient, Something would come along. And it was funny that I was a pickup and delivery driver for a coffee roastery. And it was just like, I was a late coffee drinker. It wasn't until like into my mid 20s where I started drinking coffee, and it started with the cafe mocha from Tim Hortons. It was chocolate, hot chocolate and coffee. Love it. And then it went to maybe like the double double. And then when I showed up at the roastery to do my regular pickup, they saw the Tim Hortons cup. They're like, what are you doing? And I don't know, just coffee. And I do, you guys are like, stop it. Drink our stuff. And threw me a free pound of coffee. And I brewed in the morning and started my delivery. I'm like, wow, there's a difference here. Hmm. And it was amazing. I'm just like, oh, I don't need the hot chocolate. I don't need the sugar. I don't need the cream. And so that's when I started to get into coffee. And what was really great about this roastery was the fair trade and organic side of it, because my wife did develop a bunch of like food allergies after our second child. And so we were starting to research like more organic food, the level of pesticides in food, as well as what was growing was a popularity in, I think it's like the 50-mile diet, the 100-kilometer diet, yeah. Where the idea was, you could tell I was listening to a lot of CBC, was the idea of like, how do we eat local? And so that was kind of like, starting to enjoy coffee, starting to kind of be like, how do I get away from delivering stuff that would wind up in a landfill and contributing to globally to helping farmers out of poverty, helping creating a product that would be healthier for people and more delicious for people. So that was kind of, and then it was, we were out east of Toronto, and so we were like, we were in the Schwa. We were in Oshawa. I wanted to move back to Hamilton of where I went to school, and so looking at Hamilton, of coming back to Hamilton, there was like one gentleman who was roasting, and I thought, okay, there's room for the size of Hamilton to have a second coffee roaster. And then that's where it was pitching this idea of like, hey, I think I want to be a coffee roaster. And again, you know, but that takes 3 to 6 months talking with the wife, massaging that idea of like, what do you know about coffee roasting? And so that's when we delved into all the books and blogs and just the research of it and tasting coffees. And then it was, okay, let's do this. I think we can do this.
I hear you use the word people a lot. Mm-hmm. One of the questions I had down here, I was going to ask you to put fair trade in your own words. Hmm. But I think you've done that really well, because you've focused so much on people, and it's about making people's lives better, right? Like the fair trade side of things especially. And then when you factor in the organic, it becomes a little bit more internal to say, well, I'm going to treat my own people better. Like in your case, family, right? You had a direct connection with the family there. Is it enough to say that people are important, or is that kind of what drives everything you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So then the big thing was that got me going on starting my own business was how I was treated at one time, where there was just you know, just a time where I just was brought into the office for something that they themselves should have handled, but put it all on me. And I'm like, these people don't have my back at all. Mm-hmm. And it was tough because I thought they did. And so I felt the rug being pulled out from me. I'm like, this isn't cool. I want to do something different. So when I start this company, it is people first. It's about employees. It's about people who have possibly other ambitions, so such as I have, people who love their family and want to make sure that they have their family. How do we make work and play more of a Venn diagram and overlapping? And that's what I want to do with Relay. And so then the fair trade aspect of it is people. It's always people when it comes down to it. How do we make, like, you get joy from helping other people. It's amazing. Like, it's counterintuitive that we're supposed to be getting everything for me. But once you start sharing with others, thinking of others, contributing to the success of others, man, how your heart swells. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things just go away because you because then you've brought life into this small, just gift for everyone, that you receive the gift back in a way. And so so that's what my wife and I have always done, is trying to be a company about people. So people who assist in getting me good coffee. So the farmers, they need to be paid well, and they have families, and they want to be mothers and fathers mm-hmm, to their mm-hmm, kids. Mm-hmm. And so that feels good. You know, taking care of this planet, sustainable agriculture. These farmers aren't working with a lot of pesticides and masks and stuff like that. They're working with nature and their culture and their history. And then, you know, building the team around me and Rachel, or we try to do this, like, not as a hierarchy as much, but businesses do need a level of hierarchy. Mm-hmm. I try to kind of ask for input, or try to be as inclusive as a boss and take their feedback as much as possible. That's not just my vision, it's our vision. And then putting forth a product that people can be really happy about, feel really good about. And then that's also good, because one of the things that I did here, obstacles that I felt, was like, I've had fair trade coffee. It's bad. It's gross. Or it just wasn't the same. And so I had, my part of the education, the marketing, was like, not all fair trade coffee is roasted equally. Fair trade isn't a flavor.
The first subtitle for the show, actually, for this episode, was Rejecting Bad Coffee. So it's interesting to hear you say that. Mm-hmm. You're rejecting bad people's perception of what bad coffee is. But I think it was yesterday, I realized what we want to talk to you about today is about rejecting bad human practices, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going back to the fair trade. We're going back to the organic. And 10 years ago, no, 11, 12 now, I worked with you here. Mm-hmm. You were gracious enough to throw me some part-time hours, and I helped you bag orders and bags of coffee. Yeah. And before that, I did not know what fair trade was.
Yep.
I kind of knew what organic was, because at that point it was kind of being talked about.
Yeah.
But fair trade was, to me anyways, it was a new thing. Completely new. Mm-hmm. I know it wasn't to everybody, but I think it's safe to say that in 2011, it was kind of an emerging idea in terms of our perception here in the West. Fast forward to where we are now in 2023, fair trade, organic, they're not small backroom things anymore.
No, they're in the middle of the grocery store now.
That's right. It's those big business aisles as well.
Mega business.
Yep. That spirit of people, is that where it still is, do you feel? Has it
for lost? Fair trade?
Yeah, fair trade and or organic, I guess.
People intrinsically, I believe, want to help. Do right. I do think it is trying to help people. But one of the things I've had to change or get people to understand is that you do pay a higher price for it. And then what my responsibility is to make sure then that it's really good. And so it is it's a trade. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, looking at right now our trends, I think people are struggling grocery-wise, you know, inflation. So I offer a premium product. And it, I think people are making a harder choice. If I was, you know, some inside baseball with coffee, I think retail fair trade is struggling right now for people taking home and brewing. Yet they're still, but when they do go to a cafe, they're looking for ethical and sustainable cafes. Mm. So the cafe side of Relay is strong. So which is nice about this business, that we can weather both recessions and we can go and, you know, be prosperous in other times. So I think fair trade is still about people. And then as I if you want to go back to the beginning, I can't be angry at my customers if they choose to go with a cheaper coffee because they're trying to do the best for their family. And then again, it'll be like, I'll play the long game. Hey, come back when you're ready. We'll still be here.
I really like that you use the word family a lot too, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about families and you talk about what families need. You're running a family business. You have had challenges that, I mean, on the social scale, you've had rent increases. Your own product costs more now. The idea of fair trade, organic, does that really also affect the social side of things as well? Like in terms of everyday issues, like increasing rents, urban density, or I don't know, pick your sort of hot button social issue. The unhoused right now, mm-hmm. for example.
Is it actually possible to be in the fair trade business without having some sort of conscience? You know what I mean? Like, is that actually possible? Like, because what I worry about is that, like, I start seeing it on our, you know, hey, we're fair trade, and I start seeing it on our national, more popular national thing where it becomes more of a marketing.
Well, thing, yeah, right? I would say in kind of the late 2000s, 2008, 9, 10, where Nestle was, where fair trade was really starting to kind of ramp up. Yeah. And so I shouldn't name names of corporations, but some corporations were jumping on that. And we were like, and my wife and I were watching it. We're like, this is great, you know, more in fair trade. But it went really, really fast. And then all of a sudden disappeared. Mm-hmm. And it was, and so their numbers couldn't work anymore for what they wanted to do. All of a sudden, I'm sure their shareholders are like, what's going on? You're paying more for a raw product. We're trying to do good. No. You're there to make money for me. And I'm just like, why do you want to live like that? Why can we not share? And that's what's troubling right now as I'm reading, like, where we are in the world, globally, you know, nationally and locally, of like, why do some people just have to hog it all? Yeah. We can all win.
We should be cooperative in that
country. We haven't used the word sustainable, right? Yeah. But this,
or maybe I'm just a socialist.
Oh, gosh. Oh, no. That's us canceled.
Edit. Yeah. No. we haven't used the word sustainable. We haven't talked about that word, sustainable. I know it's very much holistically in what we've been talking about all along, but we look at business practices like that, and we wonder about, is it possible for X big corporation to do more than just, hey, we're going to do good. And then when the shareholders don't get that precise return a couple years later, decide, well, we're not going to do it anymore. It's not a new thing. You just, why don't we learn from these things, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Why can we not build a more sustainable, even in big business, right? Because you look at your unnamed multinational coffee chain.
They're not sponsors. We don't mention their name.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
because they could be future sponsors, right?
Well, you never know. But and I remember sitting
burning bridges.
We lived overseas in Kuwait and South Korea, where, you know, I couldn't get my Relay coffee, for example, if it had existed at that time. But we couldn't get Tim Hortons, right? We couldn't do that. So we had to go to this multinational chain, and we noticed the pictures going up of the farmers, the idea of fair trade.
Oh yeah, at one point there was a commercial that sent like some higher up into the farmer fields and picking cherries, and you can obviously tell he was there for like 20 minutes, and it was just so funny for the photo op. Yep. And this commercial just ran of like, we're doing good and stuff like that, because it was taking a chunk out of their sales.
Well, and it was really exciting, and we felt better about our consumption. Yeah. Right, we felt better sitting in that particular cafe in Seoul, South Korea, saying, okay, good, well, at least the poorly roasted coffee, I can say that now, the poorly roasted coffee that we were consuming was at least done more ethically. Mm-hmm. But as you say, 2 years later, 3 years later, where's the narrative, right? And there's lots of things like that where people are, and we're not just rejecting bad human practices here. We're rejecting sustainability. We're rejecting things that it's not new. We should be learning from these things. And I think of, there's this, and again, I'm not going to name the company, but I'm going to paraphrase the media campaign. Shall we chat? Right? There's a certain company putting that out there for mental health. And on one hand, it's like, great, let's talk about mental health.
Yeah.
We need to so desperately. Yeah. Wow, what a need. On the other hand, you just don't trust the corporate side of things to do it well and sustainably. Sorry, Dave, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. When I see those commercials, okay, but it's better now. You know, it's just like you said, Brent, it makes us all feel better. Ha ha, I can still drink this coffee. How the heck were you treating these people before?
Yeah.
Like, why does it take a marketing campaign to convince us that you're treating people like human beings? Heaven forfend. Right? Like, that bothers me a lot.
I like that. And I like that you sort of look at the, okay, great. But, how bad was it that got you to that point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As someone who thinks, I'm pro-human. I still believe there's a chance for all of us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that just depresses me. Like when I see that, it makes me feel icky,
Yeah. But and that just comes from, I'm reading a book right now about whether or not billionaires will save us, as they promote. And it talks about these giant corporations looking to do socially conscious endeavors, and what this book is puts forward is that this is just a philosophy of consultants that have told them, in order to maximize profitability, this is what you should do. So it doesn't even come from their heart. It comes from market research. It comes from stats.
Speaking of our former favorite company, the daughter of said CEO earlier, Stephanie McMahon, actually came out and said that philanthropy is like marketing. Like something that we can do to I don't want to name all the charity and foundations.
Sure,
they're great.
Yeah,
but they use philanthropy as marketing. Yeah. That's another. We could go down that road.
We could.
And
we should. But let's.
I want to hear those guys go through their rejections of them trying to market to us and us not buying it.
Well, imagine that.
Yeah, those crocodile tears in your pillow.
Well, this will, let's focus locally again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to read a quote here. I just really liked it. So I'm not going to say too much about it. Kristen Archer, a few years ago at iHeartHamilton.ca, quoted you, and here is what you had to say. I know. For our listeners, it's cringe time for our guests when we put them on the spot like this. I must confess,
We're roasting him.
Hang
on to that for the whole episode.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. That worked really well. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Okay. Here's what you said. Quote, "We roast really good coffee," obviously. That's me saying obviously, not Jason. Quote, "No one needs another roaster in Toronto. I like keeping local. The idea is not to get super big. It's never been my intention. My intention has been to be a community business that's involved and to support my family," unquote. Well, imagine that. Imagine rejecting big for small. Imagine looking at community-focused business. And that's one thing I've always really enjoyed about it. And again, we talked about the difference between the Instagram and the online presence and the reality of the hard work that goes into things. But I will say that even as you and Rachel are working really hard, your face is out there doing stuff too. Like you do pop-ups, you do events, you extend wonderful deals to local reading series to use spaces, right? Like you do all of these things and it's visible. And I really appreciate that, that, you know, you're visible people doing visibly good things.
Oh, well, thanks. That quote warms my heart because what year was that quote?
2015. So 8 years ago.
8 years ago. And I still believe that. Like that's something I probably would have said later on this podcast of who we are. And so that like, so if I do some self-reflection, I'm like, oh man, I'm staying true to who I am from like when I started or even in the middle and when I was doing this, that it's, I'm remaining consistent to my values and what I believe. And, you know, so that feels really good. And I think we do need to like, I don't need to be huge. That's not the goal. Why can't, again, I share? Why can't other cities, towns have their own local roaster? Why can't a young couple want to start something of their own? And if I can, and I do have people email me and I have chats with people who are looking to start things. And it's not even for sales even. It's just for how do you avoid the mistakes that I did? You know, how do I just pass that on? You know, so anyways, that's a nice quote I gave to Chris.
All right. Okay, so. we can take off our deep philosophical hats now. We're going to do a bit of a speed round here. Jason, true or false, fair trade organic practices make your coffee taste better?
False.
All right, why?
Why? Because, as I said earlier, fair trade organic is not a flavor. So it depends on your roaster and it depends on your brewer. So you can give me a very expensive coffee. You can give a roaster a really expensive coffee, but if they roast it poorly, if they burn it, if they under roast it, it's going to be garbage. Or it's not going to taste well. Or you roast that really good coffee really well, but then we can get all coffee science-y is your dosage is wrong. Your water isn't hot enough. Your water to coffee ratio is off. And that will destroy a cup of coffee. There are so many things that go into a cup of coffee. So if all things being equal, yes. But unfortunately, coffee all isn't equal. So
I'm just really glad that Relay Coffee tastes great.
Yeah,
it is so fair trade and organic.
That's not how that goes.
I love it on two levels. One, it's super honest. And two, it also makes sure that your messaging is consistent from earlier in the interview. Air five. The consistency of the message. All right,
so,
number two.
Find a roaster who roasts really good coffee. And it doesn't necessarily have to be fair trade. There's lots of other independent roasters who go a different route, whether it's direct trade, because they have the resources to do that, to have a person on the plant. But find good people to support their businesses.
True or false? Lightly roasted coffee has more caffeine than dark roast. Easy one? Good. Of all of your roasts, what's your current favorite?
Oh, they're all my children. I love them.
Nice one.
My children, sometimes I like one more than the others at different times. So
it's always a competition.
I love you very much, but I don't like you right now. Yes. I've never said those words. Where did that come from?
Yeah.
All right. Next.
Okay. Oh, but which one am I enjoying the most right now? What did I brew earlier today? Oh, I've been trying a new roast or blend. So that's been really interesting. So that's a top secret. So one. So
stay tuned.
Okay. Yeah, it's a dark roast. And I know it's supposed to be specialty coffee and it's supposed to be light roast. But it was a dark roast and it was really, really good.
Nice. So, and it's one of the mixes, so it's going to have a fun name. Like you have ratio yield.
I got a great Christmas one coming up. Yeah.
This one's going to be podcast and bean or something. I don't know.
I'm just going
to throw that out.
Oh, maybe I could do it. I could do a podcast theme one. That'd be
a podcast roast.
A pod.
What would that be like?
Pod roast.
Pod
coffee.
That's a service.
Yeah.
Coffee cast.
True or false? True or false, Jason? Being a dad has made you a Taylor Swift fan.
I think Taylor Swift transcends children. I think even without kids, I'd be a Taylor Swift fan.
Finally, Are you drinking more or less coffee now than when you started out 15 years ago?
Less. I'm getting older, and so I actually have to stop earlier in the afternoon drinking coffee, or I don't sleep.
And that afternoon coffee, is it as strong as it used to be, or do you keep it?
Oh, I keep it the same. Everyone's surprised when I say I drink like one, maybe a half coffee a day. They're like, you should be drinking copious amounts of coffee. I'm like, you don't have to when you roast really good coffee. If it satisfies, it satisfies.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Excellent. I think that's a great place to wrap up. Thanks, Jason, for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
This was fun. This was fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot, too.
And Dave will be a 100% reformed coffee person.
Yeah, because you were drinking coffee all through this podcast.
This was a great start.
And your cup's empty. So for the non-coffee drinker...
It didn't take me long, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Changing really lives, good. Folks. Changing yeah. lives.
That's what I do.
Creating an audience.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you again to Jason Hoffing and for Rachel for letting him be here with us tonight. Absolutely 100% head over to relaycoffee.com and get yourself some amazing coffee, tea, and all sorts of other cool things. And they do roast the best coffee in Southern Ontario, and yes, I will fight you for it. and even Dave, after tonight's decaf experience, is thinking of changing over.
Yeah, for Relay Coffee, I'm in.
All right. It's on the record. Thanks to the internet for the background information, and especially Kristen Archer at iHeartHamilton.ca for the great piece on Relay. We're always looking for rejection stories as well that push beyond the everyday. So if you have a rejection story or idea for the show, reach out through rejectedcentral8@gmail.com or social media or our podcast website, rejectedcentral.com. And most of all, thanks for listening, Rejects. We'll see you next time.